to, or you watched one of those, one of the interviews. Yeah, my talk with her, by the way, was very, it was very interesting. It was really, wow. All I can say is that was a mind-blowing experience, especially how she came into it accidentally. You know, I don't think she talks about that in the videos that I sent you, but what I didn't know was that she's been doing this for years, researching schools and the... Won't get into the details about how it started, but long story short is she started before COVID. She started stumbling upon information through different, you know, by reading different grants and stuff like that, that indicated that they were going to be closing public schools or moving away from public schools. And she kept saying to her husband, you know, it looks like, you know, they're talking about getting rid of brick and mortar schools. And both her and her husband were like, you know, there's no way they'll ever do that. And then within 3 months, the pandemic hit. And here they are, because they're talking about shifting to, you know, that kind of digital-based skill set schooling system where, you know, they turn it into, like, you know, you get so many points and you move to the next level. Like, eventually school will be ongoing for the tech economy. And you'll be just turned into a bot, essentially, that has to, like, earn your next chip, you know? Very interesting. And she led me to something. So a few years ago, there was this very cool game that came out called Pokemon Go.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard of it. Okay. So Pokemon Go, it turns out when you look at the creators, so it goes from Niantic, and you just follow it all the way to Intel, a place called Intel Q, and Intel Q is directly related to the CIA. So the CIA actually created, in conjunction with Niantic, Pokemon Go, and here we all are, myself included at the time, playing this game, which makes the process of being tracked and traced fun. You know what I mean? Like, it
right,
brings
yeah.
it to life. And, you know, I had already suspected things about the blockchain, but basically the blockchain is what we're all going to be on. And it's just really interesting stuff. It's scary stuff. But, you know, like, in the summertime when Lionel's friend Luke was pushing, the dude who believes in Flat Earth and stuff, he's been pushing blockchain and Wise Token and all that for a long time as, like, it's decentralized, it's freedom, it's self-sovereign. But when you look into it, it turns out that it's not that at all. It's actually like, picture blockchain. First of all, just the word chain, right? We're all going to be on the chain. We're all going to be in chains, digital chains. But, like, you picture it like a little strain of DNA with little messages inside each one. So basically, every experience that you have will be inserted into the blockchain throughout the day. Every little thing you do, every little whatever, ultimately. So I didn't know this, but they've started birthing babies onto the blockchain. So they had their first one in 2018 in Tanzania. They had the first blockchain baby.
What
means is essentially that there's a digital twinning of everything that human being does. So let's say I'm on the blockchain and today I'm having a conversation with you. This experience would be dropped into the blockchain. I go grocery shopping, blockchain. So it's a digital record of everything that I'm doing, and it's stored there. I mean, it's pretty complicated, but at the base level, you can look at it that way. And the way it's pitched is that this is your information. It's decentralized. There's no one controlling it, but that's in fact not true. And then the other question that she brought up that I had never even used my critical thinking skills to parse out is, she's like, consider this: blockchain takes an immense amount of energy to power. like computing wise, right? So the future is going to be on blockchain. They're telling you that. What's going to power it? And ultimately, what the plan is for us to, through these pay for success programs, through social impact bonds, for us to essentially power, act as batteries for our own piece of the blockchain. It's eerie. It's eerie matrix type stuff. But like looking into, there's a couple of places that are particularly hotbeds in the United States for it. Austin is one, with the smart pods for the homeless and the wellness ID or whatever they're calling it to track the homeless. So the homeless are on the, there's a group of homeless that are on the blockchain, and it's pitched as basically the social workers will be the new police, right? So they will create a welfare state that is managed by these groups. They're going to securitize debt and obligations to the state, kind of the way bankers do with like mortgages and securities now. So like, for example, if Braden was on the blockchain and Tyler's on the blockchain, investors will look at will data mine them. They'll look at their potential, what they're doing, how they're learning, because everything in school that they interact with will also be connected to the Internet of Things. So they'll resonate with the human, the kid, because the kid will have an internet presence, whether they're wearing it or it's inside of them or whatever. They have biosensors, because those are being pitched now to deal with the pandemic, biosensors that actually just broke a couple of days ago in the news.
Well, that's not part of the vaccination programs.
It's about to be. They're gonna lump it. Bio and tech is gonna lump it together. But so say you had Braden and Tyler, essentially investors would look at them and be like, all right, you know, which one, they would have a profile, you know, like, so it would break Tyler's profile down into like 300 or 3,000 different metrics and give him a score, and they'll bet against the progress that they think that this human's going to make, how much taxes they're going to pay, what they're going to do with their lives, what rate of return they can get on any investment, should they need any social welfare. And in that sense, create kind of like a digital Hunger Games society, you know, like, and, I don't know, it's just, it's, and the way it's pitched is like, we're going to help you, you know, so you read these my favorite is the pay for success program, which is, when you read it, sounds good at first. And then what you realize is who's funding it. They want to know everything about you. So, for example, to State Farm wants me, I'm about to get rid of it, to save money on my insurance, gave me the safe driver thing. Well, it turns out it's sensor that I put in my, okay. So I've used it for only a few days and I'm about to get rid of it and just pay the extra $35 a month, because I can't turn my phone off. I'm not allowed to turn my location off. It tracks everything I do, everywhere I go. Now, that was already happening, but at least I could turn my phone off if I wanted to, you know. Yeah. This is saying that if I do that, then they don't know if I've gotten in my car, and therefore I could lose the discount. You know what? Keep the discount.
Right.
You know, because it's more a more comprehensive profile on my daily life than anything ever has been before so far.
They started that out not too long ago, offering that with car rentals.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know about now, because it's been a while since I've rented a car, but you had a choice. Matter of fact, you can, one of the commercials they do, it might be for State Farm or something, or Progressive, you know, with a little guy driving down the street with the fishbowl on his car. Just talks about it's either Progressive or State Farm, and it just talks about how you're covered, and so I think it's my first experience with it, in the sense of even approached about it, or about that kind of thing, was through, I don't know, one of the car rental company's budget, or it might have been Hertz or something like that, one of them. And I just said, no, I don't want to participate in that.
Yeah.
But I think even they may even offer them, I wouldn't be surprised if they haven't begun to offer them in lease, because when you lease a car, you don't own it.
Yeah.
I mean, you are obligated to pay for maintenance and so forth, but, you lease it for a certain amount of time, and if you return it within the window of mileage, without any need for repair or anything like that, you save in a sense from actually buying a car outright and making monthly payments. But the window that you got to participate in it's worked for Mike and Lauren so far, but I mean, you have to stay. And for us, to be honest with you, we could, because we don't drive that many miles anymore. I mean, it's not like we run up to Connecticut like we used to or anything
right,
like that.
Yeah.
So leasing a car would certainly work for us. And basically what you can do is, I think you can do a three-year lease, 2-3 or 4-year lease. At the end of that time, you turn the car in. And as long as you you have an option, you can go into a new lease program with a brand new car, which most people do. Or you can then buy the car outright when then you would, they would calculate the difference between what you put into the car thus far in leasing it and the actual value of it at that time.
Right.
Or at the time, as if you bought it, one or the other, and you'd pay the difference if there was any difference. I've kind of, come across a couple of those things. But question would be for me is, what would get us first? Would something like this overcome us in a sense of our sovereignty and so forth?
Right.
Before what Biden is doing, which is just overrunning us with migrants or whatever you want to call them, low wage, low skilled individuals,
yeah,
just pouring into the country, which would overwhelm. Well, I mean, it's clear that, to me anyway, that we probably don't have more than 6 months to exist. I thought we'd have a year, but I don't know if we're going to even get that far, because with the nonsense of executive orders, they're just not him personally. I mean, he's a vehicle for people behind are just using something that has no real constitutional force to basically do away with everything.
Until
you where you're going to. So I see what you and I talked about several times recently about, where we might be in a year or two with this administration, what their goals may be with, Green New Deal and climate change and all that. I think that's coming a hell of a lot faster.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is this program supported by an administration like this, even though it oversees the CIA, or is this something that is extra governmental?
It's extra governmental and it's worldwide. So in the interview that she does with Shai Dan, the Israeli, he said, it's very interesting. And that's I mentioned this to you, that how I noticed that Bibi made a very sharp shift. And like that was just in terms of who he endorsed, Trump versus Biden. And that told me that there was pressure worldwide being applied. He said, it was amazing. He's like, when the pandemic started, Bibi said, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. And then he said, one shot and we're behind this thing. He's like, now he's saying, maybe we need two shots. And he's like, the state of Israel just ordered 36 million doses of the vaccines to give people boosters every 6 months. and they're making it about to make it mandatory. So I mean, you know, I mean, and he was on the verge towards the end. You could tell he was holding back tears because he's like, you know, this is a very, he's like, it depends on your rabbi too in the ultra Orthodox community. If you have a good rabbi who knows what's up, then you're protected, because in Israel, like, they leave a lot of authority up to the rabbis, you know. But if you don't, if you have one that's going along with it or feels pressured, you're in big trouble. And I think that here in the States, what I suspect is that they intend to roll a lot of these unaccompanied minors into these test pilot programs. So when you hear him say, when you hear, and he may not even be aware of what he's doing, when you hear them say, we're creating these new holding centers and warehouses, I think that it's highly probable that if I were to start doing some deep digging into who's building them, what kind of educational services they're going to have there, they're probably going to call them absorption centers or whatever, that what you'll find is that these unaccompanied minors especially, they're going to welcome them in such large numbers because they're going to enroll them in a program. You know, and they're not going to be aware of it. They're going to be thinking like, you know, oh, you know, I'm getting all these freebies. And they are. And on its face, it's like, that's outrageous. We're paying for it. But it's even bigger than that. It's, yes, they're trying to change the demographic. That's absolutely part of it. And kill two birds with one stone. They're going to enroll these unsuspecting people in this program. They don't. We know they don't give a shit humanitarian wise, right? We know that they're doing it for selfish reasons. That's obvious. So it's the political party solidification of a unitary party, you know, one party system. That's definitely true. But as I'm learning more, I suspect, and I could be wrong, but I really think that if I look into who's funding, building, putting, throwing money behind this, and what tech they're going to use, because they're going to be holding these kids for a while, that it's going to turn out that they're throwing them on the blockchain. And they're going to do that because, right, it's easier to do to them because there's no, you know, parental consent. And also, in the schools, Allison was talking about the difference between FERPA, which is the educational privacy, and HIPAA. And actually under Obama, she was saying, you know, that they implemented FERPA and started kind of taking away a lot of parental rights via that. So basically now it's like, that's why your kid can go to school and get and be vaccinated or request all kinds of medical services, and not only do they not have to ask the parents may never know, you know? And that data, that medical data is up for grabs in terms of, so now who the school can sell it to interested parties. So the educational system, the medical system, in terms of at like the top layers, you know, I'm not talking about like, I'm not saying like your routine doctor is fully aware of what's happening. They're not, most of them. But like, that's going to be, those are going to be kind of like the driving entities behind all this, you know? And I think a lot of what the immigration right now is, aside from changing the demographic, I think the second part is gotta be, it makes practical sense that it's to enroll in a sense, and prototype and beta test on this population, and make, you know, and securitize them and begin the process of seeing what it looks like, what human capital looks like, and track and trace them and bet on them, create digital profiles for them. And of course they're doing that with American students already, but it's just easier to do it on these individuals. Especially because they're going to be getting all these benefits, right? So they're using the welfare state to implement all of this, and it's perfect. it's what they're doing in Austin, and that's why when you hear the defund the police movement, and I hadn't really made this connection, and they're saying, well, we need to bring in social workers, well, that's because ultimately the social worker is going to be the new police. It's like, you know, she gave me the example too. She's like, you know, what if, you know, you have people on disability, and the technology that they're developing things called like haptic suits. So, you know, they're saying, well, you might not be able to go into the workplace, but you can put on this suit and do this work from, you know, your home state in Iowa over in India through this haptic suit and AI, and therefore, you know, you can still serve us somehow.
So this is another point. Well, I mean, it's so multi-layered. It is. So the people who would, I mean, the children that I would consider a risk for this, obviously Haley is hopefully moving out of this system within the next couple of years, but right. only into college.
Yeah.
And college, I've got a feeling a lot of these colleges, brick and mortar colleges, are going to be gone.
Yeah.
And you're gonna do it in a way, which it would save you a lot of money, because you wouldn't. I mean, you can do a Phoenix College kind of thing as the norm.
Yeah.
To where you're yeah. at home taking courses, and periodically you check into a physical campus like UConn or whatever.
Yeah, she talks about drop-in centers. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, especially if you're doing sciences or you know, anything of that complicated nature, right. you would actually have to have some laboratories and whatever. But the kids I worry about are kids who are already tied into this system and eager to be tied into the system, and that's Tyler and Brayden.
Absolutely. Yeah, well,
I mean, they're perfect candidates because they were already, I mean, it's, they, you know, they're, I mean, unlike old, even Haley, who's only three years older than Tyler, I mean, he's very comfortable in this venue. So
it creates what's called feedback loop, so it creates a different a brand new reality.
Yeah, it's just I get it. It's just like, how the hell are you? I mean, so really we're living in the last days of what we would even legitimately call a nation state.
Yeah, I would take it even further than that and say that we're living in the last days, unless we do something, we're living in the last days of what it means to be human.
Right.
You know? Yeah, so an interesting part at the end of the...
So National Socialism comes full circle.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she was doing an interview with a black leader named...
It's not funny, but it is kind of right.
Yeah, I know. A black leader named Kevin Jenkins, who, you know, he's a very strong voice in the black community, but he's also patriotic and everything. And he was talking about, you know, he's like, you know, so all the sacrifice fighting communism, fighting socialism, you know, fighting all this stuff, and it's all for what? And he was talking about, he's like, and what makes me sick is, you know, I see black leaders going around in the community selling poor people on this, and I'm trying to wake them up to it and be like, hey, and tell them, hey, I used to believe this too, but here's what's really happening. And it's happening to us, but it's happening to everybody, you know, and you are shameless if you know this and you're going around, and he's talking about like your Al Sharptons and all the rest of them, if you're going around and race baiting people to participate in something that you know strips them of their humanity in the future. You absolutely know it, you know? And this is more than just about, like Shai said, the Israeli, he said it's more than just about people at this point. And he's not talking about it from an environmental standpoint so much. He is and he isn't. He's not. It's when he says he's talking about, it's about all living things in creation. What he's talking about is the devastation of them purposely separating us from that. From putting your feet in the dirt, or from you know what I mean? From kids playing outside without shoes and knowing what that feels like. From, you know, scraping your knees on a summer day, you know, like that, and you know, a little kid's fascination with nature, or with, you know, how we used to be fascinated by the pond and the sounds and the, you know, like, that's not going to be the existence in even a few years that a 4-year-old or 5-year-old has if we don't stop this.
Well, I suppose another way they could sell it, you know, is that in the medical benefits, you know, a person like you wouldn't have MS.
Well, they are going to sell it that way.
You know, and so there, you know, and of course, there's been a lot of work being done legitimately on diseases such as this, but they can certainly present that as, well, we, you know, I don't know if it would. Well, I suppose they would still go after a person your age, not that old, you know, mid-age. But they could say, well, there'll be, you know, there'll be no more of this malady, or maybe even cancer or something like that. And most people would say, you know, like going on experimental programs when you run out of everything else.
Yeah.
And knowing that the risks are like 999 to 1, but you take, you know, saying, well, I'm going to die anyway, let me take
my
a shot.
Well, yeah.
Or you could, not everybody does. But it's just between, I mean, how the hell do you, how in God's name do you resist any of this? I mean, on the ground, you know, people like us, everyday people, who aren't involved, certainly for myself, I'm not very knowledgeable about this stuff. So they're getting rid of religion. I mean, they're already going, this administration is going to try to wipe out Christianity as a valid counterforce. I mean, they've been doing that since the Obama era, but they're certainly going to, it's going to go into high gear. And then you've got a lot of these churches now who have become progressive just to survive.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It's, you know, there, it's pervasive.
I've listened to the second video, I haven't listened.
Yeah, I mean, the message that they deliver...
Sure, I mean, I don't know what more could I do about it.
Well, the message that they deliver, too, is that as bad as it is, there is hope. And, you know, what she says is, she's like, you know, I've got to cling on to that the more I learn. But, you know, we're at as you know, Reagan's speech was titled, you know, in 1964, Time for Choosing... I mean, we're at that point. I would say, if I were to liken it to like a roller coaster ride, you know, where you're about to brace for the big dip, we're on our way up. We're on our way up. We're ticking up to the top, you know, where you reach the crescendo and you look down and you have the butterflies in your stomach, and then you're about to, like, you know, go down at like 70 miles an hour or however crazy fast those things go. You know, I mean, there's an opportunity, but it's going to be... I mean, people need to understand what's going on to be able to choose. And the reality is if it is a choice, that changes the dynamic for me. Because I know that there's certain inevitabilities, right? I can't stop tech, and there's a lot of positive things that can come from it. The question is whether or not it's non-consensual. And it's very clear, based on the research, it's very clear that it's going to be non-consensual. Whether it's because you're tricked and manipulated. In fact, she goes as far as to say that as she gets deeper into the research, she said, you know, to a point, she's like, I have to wonder if general AI, that is strong AI, is already in existence and in fact running it. You know, like, it's, Michael Bloomberg is going to run as an electrical engineer, is going to run a part of it. It's interesting. She said, and I didn't believe it until I looked it up, because I was like, no, that one's just too outrageous. The National League of Mayors, or National League of Cities, had a mayoral conference in Washington, D.C. the day before the pandemic was declared last year. And in that meeting, Michael Bloomberg instructed mayors. I mean, it was already in the news, so it's not like COVID hadn't been announced. It's not, you know... not that surprising, I suppose, some could say, but it's still dubious. He was there and instructed them all on the template for the approach that they should all take. Didn't give them marching orders, but said, this is the progression of how things are going to go. We're going to have a lockdown to deal with this thing. Here's the suggestion, strong suggestion, on how everybody should behave. And of course, there was incentives and tied to that, you know, about how much help people would get for their cities, depending on what measures they put into place. But it's interesting that the day before the declaration, you have, you know, mayors, all the mayors of the big cities of consequence meeting and discussing that. And moreover, they were discussing what the post-COVID, you know, like when we come through this, you know, here's what will be different. Here's how we can prepare for the next one. So they were having this discussion in, I think in, it was held in Washington, as a group of mayors with Michael Bloomberg the day before the WHO formally announced the pandemic. So formally announced that it had moved from the status of what, like, you know, an issue of national health concern or whatever they called it, to pandemic, right? That timing is interesting. And then, you know, I mean, you've got all these programs in Austin. Well, where was, you know, if you go to texasscorecard.org or com, I forget which one, but anyone can Google it and see. There's a great article in there about Mayor Adler going to China in December of 2019 for what they call, what he called, I think it's what he called, a vacation slash business with his family. So, first of all, very interesting vacation destination with your family. I mean, whatever. But I just find it very interesting because we're using a lot of their technologies here in Austin. Now, Austin is a tech hub, so I guess the other counter to that is, well, don't be all conspiratorial. Austin's a tech hub, you know. But it's worthy of questions, you know, like just the timing of things. What are these people up to? To me, it's like, well, I want to know more about that. I want to know what other affiliations he has. It's Allison made 400 different maps. And she had them on littlesis.com. And she's like, it's ironic because George Soros's Open Societies Foundation funds that site. And she didn't like that she had to use it, but she had to use it because it provided her tools. Well, they erased a lot of her maps, which took her 4 years to make. So she's like, luckily a lot of people took screenshots, and when I announced that they had destroyed them all, it turns out that so many of her viewers had taken screenshots and turned them into little JPEGs, like little pictures, and saved them on their own personal computers, figuring that that would happen or wanting to share with friends. So just through that, she was able to recover a small amount of them. But, you know, I think it says a lot that the entity went in there and was nervous enough about her work to steal them all, you know? If her work was not meaningful and true, and she wasn't highlighting things that made them nervous, there would be no need to do that.
Yeah.
You know, there would be no need at all. I mean, what justification could you have? So, you know, I mean, all we can do is continuously, revoke consent, like, you know, not consent to this stuff, and try to tell people. So what Lauren agreed to and was, you know, expressed gratitude over is, I said, I will do my best to synthesize all of this into a document, you know, between 5 and 7 pages for you. And I'll try to make it concise and just give you the basics as best as I can, synthesize all of this. And then if you have any questions or want a follow up, then I'm happy to do that. And if not, then I'll leave it where it is. So, you know, that's the best way that I can figure to help, yeah, to help her. But there's not a lot. I mean, you know, there's not a lot she can do. Allison speaks about, you know, she's like, you know, once I realized what was happening, as much as I want to look away, I can't. She's like, you know, I have to, as a mom, make my stance between people I love and my children or child or whatever and this technocracy. Because she said the interesting part is the best, let's say that this rolls out full blast, the best that you can hope for your kid is that they will be in the small group of people that will be controlling everyone else.
True.
You know, no, seriously. So, like, if you are at the higher echelons and you're working at a tech company, you are helping mine people's data, and you're controlling the virtual environment and developing this stuff. So you may have a very cool job, but you. And you probably aren't, let's say Tyler grows up and he's part of that. He's probably not going to be aware of it, or maybe he will be by that point. But that's the best future. And if your best future is one of where you're kind of like a digital slave master working under a slave master, that's no future at all. Yet on the other side of the coin, you've got to prepare your kids for something. And if you don't prepare them for this new terrain, then they're walking in, you know what I'm saying? So like it's kind of a tough spot to be in, you know? So to me, I mean, my answer is we have to find a way to smash it, you know, like not just revoke consent. You know, she's a pacifist. I look at it as and it's funny, Kevin Jenkins is this black leader, his whole thing is, you know, like it's got to be, you can tell he comes at it the same. He's like, this is a fight for humanity. As a granddad, you know, my blood runs hot. Yours is, you're a more loving person. He's saying to Allison, he's like, you know, this is a war to me. You know, a war about good and evil. And he's like, you know, I'm ready to face the authorities. He's about, I think, 70, 68 or 70 years old. And the way he looks at it is, you know, I'm not going to consent. Not only that, but like, you know, I'm willing to do what I have to do at the end of my, in the winter of my life, to know for my soul that I did my part. As I, you know, leave this world to my grandkids and my sons, and and that's all I can do is try to do.
I think, you know, still one of the things that is valuable is to, you know, try to forge some kind of association of like-minded states.
Yeah.
And even if it's a few, and just form your own entity. I mean, maybe you know, in the long run, you wouldn't. I mean, depending on how the landscape looks. These things can still be broken. I mean, what was Terminator about, right? They eventually destroyed the company.
Absolutely. And I want to say this, too.
And they started with nothing, really.
Yeah. She makes it very clear that in no way, even though things are moving quick, in no way do they have the infrastructure completely in place, especially in places like the U.S. Now, in the 10 digital nations that are the experimental nations, they're much closer. In Israel, they're very close to being in a spot where they can't reverse it, but they're not there yet. And there are a lot of moving parts to this plan. You know what I mean?
They're trying to, like, one of the things we've got to watch is they're trying to cleanse, in their terms, the U.S. military.
Yeah.
Which is
scary.
You know, there's several different strings they're using. One is to obviously dilute it with their transgender and make it an experiment population.
Yeah.
But they're also trying to rid it of those people who they feel would probably stand against them.
Yeah.
Not that that's, you know, they're making it out like, well, there's the white supremacists are in the military. No, that's not true. I mean, are there people that may be that way? Sure, but there are probably people in there who support BLM too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But generally speaking, the military as it was created, even though the president is commander in chief, the military takes its oath not to the commander in chief, but to the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah. So it's still a bulwark against everything that they want to do, even now.
Yeah.
Which is why when people come in, Obama did it, this administration's doing it, you try to bring in your own people, which is understandable, but these people they're not there to coming in to support the sovereignty of the nation. They're coming in to see how they can dilute the military and control it through the new people that they put in at the high levels and down, not necessarily at the major and colonel levels, maybe to some extent, but you're looking at the people in the Pentagon and stuff like that, the people who play the big game. You bring in your own individuals, like you've already seen with some of these new generals and admirals and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are political, and whether they agree with your worldview, most of them are trying to play the... I'm sure some do, because people think, everybody is John Wayne or something, and that's not true. The military is made up of people, even the hierarchy. You got people there who, for good reasons, who have earned their spot and trying to protect the country and our place in the world. There's others who are looking at power and political advantage.
Yeah.
And hell with the rest of it. As long as we still... we're almost a one-party state now. Well, very close. I was thinking, 1 year, 2 years. I'm thinking maybe not even, maybe 6 months to a year even if somebody runs against these people, how are you going to beat them?
Right.
How are you going to beat them? That's another conversation, but I'm just saying they really have made some key chess moves over the last...
Yes, they have. And I mean, I think that if I were to try to turn that on its head and look at the positive as best as I can, I would say the reason that they're moving things along quicker is because they're not succeeding. Like, it feels like to us they are, because we look at and like, holy shit, all this stuff is in place, and some of it I'm even learning about, and I'm like, wow, we're playing 10-dimensional chess against a grandmaster, and I don't even know how to play, but the reality is they're actually moving more quickly because they recognize that it's interesting, we're over here saying time is up, and I guess what I'm saying is the good news is I'm pretty damn convinced on the other side they're saying, oh shit, time's up. They're getting it, because all that needs to really happen is for less than 1% of the world's population to be like, absolutely not, and they're done. They can't do it. They simply can't do it. And protests are really erupting in earnest, rejecting so much of the agenda and looking at the big picture. All around the world, people are, really pushing back.
No, that's true.
And the movement is not becoming, they're trying so hard to keep it a fringe movement. The reality is in the UK, the anti-vax movement, it's no longer a fringe movement. It's busting into mainstream. And they're trying very, very hard to turn the tables and to keep that narrative going. It's still going very successfully here. Unfortunately for the agenda, the people are actually turning the tide. It's like turning an oil tanker around in a puddle, but they're turning the tide in the UK. They're turning the tide in I know the Ireland's part of the UK, but particularly in Ireland and Dublin. In Dublin, signs are going up all over the place. Don't take the vaccine. COVID is being used as a mechanism to do this. Reject smart cities, like all kinds of stuff. And they're going up so fast, and the people are coordinating that as the authorities are trying to take them down, they're going back up. But what I'm saying is the people there are organizing.
That's good. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, I think a lot of it is just finally the rebellion to by the everyday person. I want to go back to work. I want to make a living. I want my kids to be able to, go out of the house and do this. So I think that the backlash is finally really open, is finally beginning to show itself to the lockdowns and to the continued nonsense and the lies that we've been told.
Right.
And once that breach happens, it's like anything else. You get that one little crack and Hoover Dam, and you're done.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's hope. There's definitely hope. Anyway. I've got to go feed our dog, and we're still sleeping with Mom.
You do that, Dad.
Chat anytime.
All right, I'll give you a call tomorrow at some point.
All right.
All right, I love you, Dad.
Get some rest. Love you.
All right, bye-bye.